reacting to the constant.
Hartman. By killing the project, you become a hero in the Muslim world.
Thanks for listening to the Mile High Show, Milestone episode 150, recording at one of my favorite places in the area, Big Daddy's Barbecue, sponsor today's show, BDEBBQ.com is where you can find their menu and their phone number and links to their social media, Facebook, of course, and Twitter and Instagram at BDEBBQ. Great place to eat. Torrance Dunham is who I'm sitting with today, local journalist. And if you listen to last week's episode, local journalist, videographer, photographer, and horrible son. We'll get into that a little bit with Torrance. We'll find out what he ate and why and if it was any good in just a minute. But I want to let you know, sponsors of today's episode, of course, Big Daddy's Barbecue, Eric Vernier, puts the best spread out. He's looking at us through the window right now, and I'm hoping he does not use that knife to cut meat, and I will not explain what he was doing with the knife, but it was not sanitary. Today's specials listed on the board, a shrimp po' boy. We'll find out what Torrance had and if it was any good. I am drinking Diet Coke because I did not drink my coffee this morning. But this show is brought to you by Big Daddy E's, BDEBBQ.com. And next week, where I will be, is at the Big Pine Comedy Festival. Also brought to you this week by BigPineComedyFestival.com, a premier comedy festival taking place in Flagstaff, Arizona. It is the third annual. The second time I have been associated with them. We'll be up there doing podcasts, a lot of photos, some video, and having a good time with some of the biggest comics in touring the country, including Brant Tobler. His new book, Free Roll, is soon becoming a bestseller. And I'll be sitting down with Brant to record Billy O'Connor, author of Confessions of a Bronx Bookie. We're going to try and get him on as well again. But they're doing readings and book signings up there. The full schedule is at BigPineComedyFestival.com, September 14th, 15th, and 16th. Full festival passes are like next to nothing. I don't do homework very well. They're nothing, though. They're cheaper than like two show prices. I want to say under $50. They might even be like $20 or $30 for 3 days, all day long. Festivals, shows at night, stand up shows and open mics during the day, seminars on social media, podcasting, hosting and booking shows. Yeah, help yourself. But it's going to be 3 full days of comedy and entertainment related stuff going on, so we'll have some updates on that. And of course, my guest today, Torrance Dunham. Thanks.
Yes, thank you for coming down.
What'd you eat? Let's give a review on your food first.
All right, so I had a pulled pork sandwich, the classic. Love it. You know, and I have a listing of pulled pork sandwiches. I actually rate in my mind on website, so you can look it up, unfortunately. But I rate 2 things: pulled pork sandwiches and macaroni and cheese.
Yeah.
Which I both got, macaroni and cheese and a pulled pork sandwich. And this place is tied with a place in California named Baby Blue's Barbecue.
Where's that at?
That is in, it's around the Santa Monica area.
So Southern Cal? Okay.
Yep, so Southern California. I can't decide which is better. But
what you need to do
great.
Is what we can do. So Santa Monica, about depending on time of day, 6-7 hours. So what we could do is we'll slap this recorder in the car, in our the Mile High Show mobile studio. It's that van right there. Mm-hmm. We'll come here. They open at 11 o'clock. Mm-hmm. We'll get a couple of takeout orders, start eating them, jump on the highway, and then have dinner in Santa Monica.
See, I'm down for that.
And we'll have to do it.
I'm down for that.
So if anybody would like to sponsor that show,
yes,
and pick up the tab for not only lunch and dinner, but the gas and Two rooms.
Yeah.
We're not rooming.
No.
We're not rooming. And we will run that as a barbecue edition.
Yeah.
But where can we, let's get this out of the way. We mentioned it last week. I bumped into you all over recently, but we were at the Territorial Days Parade here in Chino Valley, and we talked for a couple minutes. You gave us your website and all that, but let's do it again.
Sure.
Where do folks find out about you? Not necessarily that woman you work for.
So for me, a couple different places. So on Twitter, it's Tad Dunham, TadunHam. So that's where I'll tweet about. I don't tweet a whole lot, but I'll retweet a bunch. So I retweet a lot of stuff. Usually it's comedy about baseball, or it's comedy about other things. Like, I don't remember the last thing I tweeted about. But
I want to talk to you about sports, because I know that is a
yes.
What happened to my phone? I was gonna pull up your.
I gotcha. You mean my Twitter page?
Okay, yeah, there you go.
There you go.
This is the kind of stuff you'll hear from Torrance. I am stealing a page from Greg Fitzsimmons. But you retweeted from Chris Vosmer.
Yes.
Who's that? Who's Chris Vosmer?
That is one of my friends that I actually roomed with in Santa Monica when I was out there during the summer.
Ah. And for a team that's only been around 19 years, that's so crazy. Not a lot of content there, Torrance.
Well, there was something there, and it was by MLB Stats. And I think originally what it said, and I don't know why they deleted it, it said the Diamondbacks are the first team in history to have a perfect game, a 20-strikeout game, and a 4-homer game. But MLB Stats and Info deleted that tweet. So I don't know if it was wrong.
Oh, gotcha.
I couldn't find it again. But, I mean, that's what the tweet was referencing to.
You big stat guy?
I am a big stat guy.
Why?
I just think it, you know, it tells a story. But, obviously, stats don't tell the entire story. But I think stats are a good background to the story. And they're just fun to look at, you know?
It's like math. It's like working.
See, I hate math, but I love baseball statistics.
Okay. And then your Torrance D_journalism on Instagram, which you already said.
Mm-hmm.
You are sorely lacking in that.
Yeah, I am
what
sorely lacking on
my
Instagram.
Phone?
And that's your new phone, right?
Yeah. And the reason I had to get a new phone is because the old one kept turning itself off.
Did you send it into Apple and they sent it back to you?
No, it's an Android.
Oh, it's an Android. See, that's why I got to join the Apple fanboy.
Oh no,
club.
I got my watch.
I got my iPhone. I got my MacBook Pro, and then I got my desktop Mac.
So we're sitting here with Matt Hinshaw Jr.
Right.
You also have dolls, right?
Yes. You know, little bobbleheads. They're action figures.
You didn't correct me when you used the action figures.
Some people call them dolls.
No, they're dolls. They're dolls. My
their heads.
9-year-old niece plays with them as well. So you and Matt Hinshaw, and my 9-year-old niece, have a lot in common. And that's unfortunate because he's a 30-year-old man, and you are, how old are you?
I'm almost 24. I turn 24 tomorrow. Today's September the 8th, right?
It's back on.
Oh, it's back on? Good. Today's the 8th, right?
Yeah.
Because yes, tomorrow's the 9th. Yeah. So my birthday is tomorrow. I'm going to go see
September
it.
September 9?
Yep. 9993.
My son is 999.
Really?
Yeah, he will be 8 years old tomorrow.
Oh, cool.
No, that just means I'm old.
Do you know Ryan O'Hara?
Yeah.
I share the birth with him as well.
Another reason not to like you.
Right?
Man.
We all share it.
So I had a buddy of mine who was, I love sports as well.
Mm-hmm.
Not to the extent or level that you do. We're watching what's his name?
SpongeBob SquarePants. The episode where they're selling the chocolate bars and he's and he's trying to find chocolate bars in the various little bags
14,
that he's had. You know, 20. I think I'm 9. I don't know. See, like my friends, and I'll tell you a funny story on here. My friends are gonna hate this for me telling this story, but I'll just keep it quick. They said first day of class in videography, college course. Yeah. I thought it would be funny. My friend is talking to a girl, and I thought it would be funny to ruin his day. So they're like, okay, why don't y'all talk to each other? I'm like, okay, great. So then he's talking to this girl he likes, and then I lean in and like, so who here likes SpongeBob? I mean, that's a great show. And of course, he disowned being my friend.
You weirdo.
It was great, though.
I grew up going to ball games. Mm-hmm. It was, at the time, oddly enough, and if you're under, you know, mid-20s, you probably don't understand this. But at the time, in the late 60s, early 70s, it was a very economical way to take the family out. We grew up outside of Oakland in the San Francisco East Bay. So it was about a 15, 20-minute drive up the highway to go to the Oakland Coliseum. So the A's games are where we went. And this was in the swinging A's era of the early 70s, Reggie Jackson, Sal Bando, Campanaris, all those guys, when Chuck Finley owned the team. And I forget what they went, 3-4 World Series in a row, Gene Tennis, Raleigh Fingers, the great A's era. And my dad worked for a Caterpillar tractor for like 39 years. And all the trucking company, he worked in a depot, and the trucking companies would come through. So he would get free tickets, like three or four tickets in the regular seats. Usually pretty good, like right behind the dugout and that, from the different trucking companies and the salesmen and stuff like that, little promo things. And then he would load all of us up, my mom and him and my four siblings. It was five of us. And typically a neighbor kid or two. So there'd be 10 people in our big Plymouth satellite wagon. And he would go up with his three or four really nice tickets and give them to one of the security guards, and then the security guard would sell them, scalp them, and then let us all into the bleacher seats because it was general admission bleachers. Mm-hmm. So for free, we would get into this ball game. And even then, I mean, bleacher seats were a buck, mm-hmm. and then they would run Monday nights and Wednesday, any afternoon game during the week, not weekends. But Monday nights were family nights, mm-hmm. every ticket half price. You can get in the bleachers for 50 cents. And then either a Wednesday or Thursday day game, they called them businessman specials. So we would cut school in the 80s, late 70s and 80s. Cut school, jump on the BART train, our version of a subway. And, you know, for a buck, be able to go to Oakland, get off right at the Coliseum, pay 50 cents, and instead of going to history class, go see an A's game. Yeah. And so we grew up going to ball games. I love the feel of going into a stadium, going into the ballpark and watching the game. I love watching the game, but as an A's fan, I would just as soon see them lose a close game than win by a landslide. I like watching the game.
Yeah.
Couldn't quote a stat for the life of me. Grew up going to games, don't know stats, too much like work, and I never understood that analytical side. For me, going to a ball game was more of the experience of the ballpark and the sights and smells and sounds and that. And it's I just never got into the hardcore stat guys like yourself, like mm-hmm. John Rust, who can rattle stuff off like crazy. Why the stats? What were you doing that when you were a kid?
I was. And that's the thing, like I said earlier, is that I hated math. And my mom always told me, why can't you do math, but you can sit there and you can talk about the averages of all the Diamondbacks? I said, well, because I like stats. You know, I don't like when, I'm sorry, but I'm almost 24 years old. I haven't had to solve for X since I was a freshman in college. So, you know, so I don't get it, you know. But, you know, stats kind of tell a story. Like, you know, like that stat I said earlier with, like, where the Diamondbacks, where it's, I don't know if it's right anymore because they deleted it. I wish they didn't. But, like, a stat like that where it's like, oh, you know, this, you know, stats kind of tell the history. So,
yeah.
So the first team in history to have a four-homer game, a 20-strikeout game, and a perfect game. Like, that's all stats right there, you know, or somebody that's hitting, like, 334. It kind of tells you, like, this player is historic or 350 or something like that. So, don't get me wrong. There's a lot of stats in baseball now. There's war. There's wins above replacement. I don't count that into I don't get that. I don't understand that. They're saying, like, this player is worth two war. I have no idea what that means.
What is it good for? Absolutely.
Exactly.
Nothing.
Thank you. Exactly. That's
I'm gonna
exactly
break
the way it is. Yeah.
70s funk.
You know, I like I like ERA. I like Ks per nine. You know, it kind of tells you how good a pitcher is. You know, or whip, walks and hits per innings pitch. It's like, you know, a player can have an ERA of two or three, but his whip is like 1.5, 1.6. That means he's good at getting lucky. You know?
Now I know why people think baseball's boring.
Exactly.
They listen to guys talk about stats.
Exactly. You look at all this stuff like that. But once you see it, though, and actually in action, it's kind of fun. Although I never played chess. I call it like a chess game, but I've never played chess before.
Yeesh.
You know? So, yeah, it's kind of fun.
All right, let's go. Okay, and oh, did we get? We never got through your social media. We got Twitter, mm-hmm. we got Instagram, torrencedunham.com.
Mm-hmm.
What can folks see there?
Okay,
I was looking at it the other day. I know, because
yes.
that's the only bit of homework I did.
So,
that and knowing what time Big Daddy E's open.
Right. See, that's the more important thing is what time Big Daddy E's open. But for Twitter, so I'll tweet a lot of sports stuff. Sometimes I'll retweet a whole bunch of stuff, and it's not just sports. I'll retweet funny stuff as well.
SpongeBob SquarePants.
Exactly. See?
GIFs.
That's the best place to find them is my Twitter page. Instagram, I got to get back on Instagram. I was doing really good, and then I kind of like let it slack, which is bad.
Which is odd, like we were talking about before we plugged in, because you are a visual journalist more than anything.
Yes.
I mean, you do write in that, but the visual aspect, both in video and stills, is really your wheelhouse.
Yeah, you know... that's why I don't get that. I'm not doing anything on Instagram. But you know what I'll do on Instagram is that I'll put a whole bunch of stuff up at once, like three or four posts, and then I'll stop for like a week or two, and then I'll put up a whole bunch more. Honestly,
but
I could do one every day.
Yeah, and it's not that you're not. You're doing them for other outlets.
Yeah.
As we mentioned jokingly, don't want to give her too much publicity, but you do a lot of work locally for the E-News, AZ Family, Prescott E-News, Prescott Valley E-News. So you're updating and administrating on those social media sites as well. So it's not like you're not on them. It's just not, you're not on yours.
Exactly. So pretty much what I'll do is like the fight, the MMA and aggression session anarchy that happened at the Prescott Valley Event Center. I got a couple good photos when that was going on. And I put them on the Facebook page on E-News. The thing, I was sad, though. I didn't get as much response as I thought I was going to get out of that. You know, I did have to include a discretion, though, because there was some blood.
Well, this area for the semi and pro sports, other than, like, when the Sundogs hockey program was in its first couple of years, people were really fired up about it. Ideally, the reactions to not only your work, which was stellar for the Northern Arizona Suns.
Oh, thank you.
But also the Suns program in general, they did a great. They put on a great program. They've got a great club. The tie-in to the Phoenix Suns a couple hours down the highway helps.
Mm-hmm.
People were really fired up about that last year. We hope that continues. But when they've done bigger events like the MMA or like other pro and semi-pro events at the arena, this area just doesn't grasp onto them.
You know, and I've noticed that too, and I don't get that. Honestly,
hopefully that will change as the demographic changes.
Mm-hmm.
What I see it as, and what we've been crossing paths recently at, is the high school and the college level sports, because a lot of the families here, like we were together at Chino last week.
Yeah,
there are parents who graduated from the first, second, and third graduating classes of Chino High, whose kids are now there playing, and then their grandparents, before Chino High existed, they were at Prescott. So those family roots are here, and then, of course, the dynamo of Yavapai College with their deep baseball programs, their workhorse of soccer programs, and their softball program. I don't know how they're doing lately, but they had gone to nationals a few different years. Those programs have really good followings, and it's almost like the pro sports, because the arena's only been in existence since, what, 05, 06?
Yeah.
They're kind of like the outsiders.
Mm-hmm.
So hockey grabbed really quick. There's a lot of displaced folks here from the East Coast and from the Midwest, so they're kind of hockey blood already. But the other things just kind of aren't – they're the newbies.
Yeah.
And the baseball and the football programs at Prescott and at Yavapai – go back so far, there's generations who have played and watched. So it's really kind of that old, that small town America feel at these, especially Prescott's games.
Yeah, and
those,
I mean, for me, you know, I have a deep history here too as well. Lincoln School, of course, has been around forever. My grandpa actually went to Lincoln School.
Oh, wow.
So then I went to Lincoln School as well. But, of course, like, they moved to California and New York, so it's not like we've been here for our whole life.
But the roots are there, which is odd, because as we determined before, we alluded to, you're not a very good son.
I'm not.
So
I'm not a very, no.
That comes up because I asked you how old Your parents were last week.
Now, does that make me a good son, though? Because I don't ask the age.
No, it makes you a horrible son.
Make
you feel bad. A horrible son. You're just a horrible person.
That's true.
Which probably goes into other aspects of your life. I'm betting you're probably just not a good person overall.
No. Yeah. Don't ask my friends. Some of the things I say to them makes me realize that I'm probably a pretty bad person.
Of course.
I put on a face when I'm out in public.
Of course, we're just kidding.
Yeah.
Your parents, when I met them out on the sidewalk in front of E! News, maybe a year or so ago, just happened to bump into them. And they were very proud of the work that you're doing around here. What was, Charlie, you grew up here in Prescott?
Yep.
You say your family had gone out of area. Was that before you were around?
Yeah. So essentially, my mom was born in California, spent a whole bunch of her time in California. My dad spent a whole bunch of his time in Jersey. And then when my mom moved to New York, they were actually in New York at the same time, and they moved to Washington. So that's where I was born, is in Washington State.
Oh, okay.
Puyallup area. Then we moved down here, Puyallup. It's a little small town.
Is there a casino there?
There is. There is a casino there. That's about all that's there is a casino. You know, I went and visited Seattle for the first time and Washington more for the first time forever. And, you know, I couldn't believe how much open space there was, because when I was a kid, I thought it was all...
Gotcha. Now, how old were you when you moved out of there?
I moved out of there when I was 5.
Oh, okay.
So I've been here forever. I went to Lincoln School. I went to Mile High Middle School.
Now, which one's Lincoln?
Lincoln is the one. That's the thing. I'm terrible with streets. Lincoln is the one that's downtown.
Like right downtown, or is it up by like where Magic 99?
It's up more towards 99.
Like going to Hacienda.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Not the golf course, not the hotel. Isn't that up
not
there?
Sure.
I think so. I know where it is. Yeah.
So Lincoln School's up there. And then I went to Mile High, and then I went to Prescott High School. And then I went to Yavapai College for a year. And Yavapai College was interesting because I walked in there and they said, we could start you off with 5 credits. I'm like, no, I just got done with 7 classes. I took 20 credits and an internship and a job my first full year as a college student. So I've spent a lot of time here, and then I went off to ASU, and I'm back.
Yeah. I want to talk about ASU and the Cronkite School.
Sure.
Because that has always been my own self-imposed regret. Never getting a degree, never going to college. Mm-hmm. Pretty much I've had 2 full-time jobs in my life as a photojournalist, and in a different aspect, I got out of journalism for about eight and a half years, and the job I took ended up being something where basically a MBA or something along those lines was required, and I bypassed that. Mm-hmm. So I've always had this deficiency, this feeling that I didn't belong in my jobs because everything that I had was required a degree, and I just kind of got by with guts and what I hope to be talent.
Yeah.
But it's always hung over my head. Everybody I've ever worked for and the people that worked for me all had much more secular education than I did. Mm. And it always gave me this kind of inferiority complex.
You know, I kind of feel that journalism is a weird job where I feel like it's great if you have one. But, you know, like you said, like you've made it really far without having one. And that's the kind of thing, like, if you go to, like, a doctor or something like that, or a surgeon, and they're like, well, I didn't have a degree, you're going to be like, what? You know? But, like, you took wonderful photos, and, you know, no one's gonna be like, hey, Matt, did you get a degree to do that? No, I just taught myself.
It always comes up on resumes and things, which I've never done. It's kind of an interesting thing. I have a friend, an acquaintance who went to a college in New Mexico. Mm-hmm. That soon after he graduated in the mid-90s, it closed and was dark for a couple of years, then reopened under the same name but with a different structure behind it.
Mm-hmm.
And then a couple of years after that, the place burned down and they never opened it. So there's really no way to verify diplomas.
Yeah.
So pretty much anybody who wants to has graduated from that school, and I can't remember what it was. He majored in film, but he told me one day, he said, through email, he says, just tell everybody you went there. There's no way they could verify. Now, a college where I did attend very shortly in California, I had gone through the junior college JUCO system at Chabot College for a little bit. And the reason being is I had been working for a local publication in the Bay Area newspaper, mm-hmm. and stringing and contract work and freelancing for a bunch of different agencies, wire services and local papers and that. And then I was a staffer for a small weekly paper, but I wanted to get into the daily that I was already shooting for. Mm-hmm. And they had an opening come up, and they said, it's yours. It was projected out. Somebody was retiring in a couple years. And in the course of his announcing his retirement, way in the advance, they were getting inundated with resumes and portfolios from all over the country. People with years of experience on dailies and wanting to relocate to the Bay Area. And every single one of them had a degree in something. Mm-hmm. And the editor pulls me aside and he goes, it's yours if you want it, but you've got to get a degree. You've got to get something. We don't care what it is. Get some letters behind your name. Go get an AA. We don't care. Mm-hmm. So I was 18 at the time. So I go and take a couple classes at a junior college there, Chabot College, and took a math, took an English, and then took a photojournalism class, which they were just offering. And it was taught by a fine arts photographer who actually had worked under Ansel Adams in the 60s or something. Excellent photographer, couldn't shoot a football game if his life depended on it. And here, my first newspaper job was when I was in high school, mm-hmm. for this weekly. And I'd been stringing for other ones for a couple of years throughout high school. So I'm, 4 years into my career with the opportunity to get this job if I get a degree. So I take this photojournalism class, and I'm bored out of my head because we're talking about theory and this, and not talking about anything that you do in photojournalism. And the instructor could tell I was not enthusiastic. And he goes, he pulled me aside one day. He goes, I've seen your work. You're pretty. You got some good stuff, but you're not really fine. I said, we'll get there. It's only a couple weeks in. He goes, well, I'm getting the feeling that a lot of these guys aren't. What got you fired up to do what you want to do? I said, that's easy. When I was a freshman in high school, and I gave him the name, I said, this guy, Dino Vernis, really nice guy, still mm-hmm. shooting. He came to my high school and did a presentation and talked about shooting the Raiders and shooting the Niners and A's games and shooting house fires and shootings, mm-hmm. police action stuff. And I got so fired up. That's what I wanted to do. Excuse me. Mm-hmm. I get all excited. I start spitting. And I said, that's when I decided this is what I wanted to do. He goes, that's great. Where does he work? So I said, well, he works for this paper. And that. So the instructor calls the local paper and says, we'd like to have somebody come and do a presentation. Mm-hmm. Well, a day later, I get a call from the paper. They go, hey, we got an assignment for you. Can you? And so Monday. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking, well, I got class on Monday, but I'm going to blow class so I can go do this assignment. I go, sure. No, I'm available. What do you got? Well, we need you to go to Chabot and do a presentation for this class.
All right. Please tell me you did it.
I show up to the class, set up my easels. This is all print days, obviously. This is in the 80s, early mm-hmm. 80s. And I set up all the stuff, and the class is kind of coming in. So I find this out later. They're assuming I'm there to help the guy set up. Mm-hmm. So I set up all my stuff, and they're walking around looking. Oh, this is, and I had pro sports stuff, a lot of high school stuff, some college stuff, some house fires, some a murder scene, and different stuff, just stuff that I. And then I sit down a couple minutes before class starts. Class starts and. The instructor comes out and he goes, hey, did he leave? I see his stuff's up. And I get up and start my presentation. And he's like, what are you doing? I go, these are mine. The paper sent me. And he goes, what? He goes, do you work? I go, no, I'm contracted. They sent me down. So I go through my presentation, do a Q&A with my classmates. After the class, he pulls me aside and he goes, hey, you don't need to be taking this class. He goes, would you like to do it as a student teacher, and then we'll get you some lab to? We can't pay you, but we'll get you, if you work with them in the lab, you'll be a lab assistant. That you get paid for. I think it was like $4 an hour or something, mm-hmm. like 4 hours a week. So I did that for two semesters, or we're on the quarter system, two quarters. And the whole time I'm not getting any class credit, so right. I'm not working towards my degree. Ended up having to drop the other classes and stuff. Mm-hmm. So I started doing that. And then didn't go through it. The job came and went, and I went a different course. Still kept submitting, still kept working for the paper. Flash forward almost 10 years, and everything's going to digital. and mm-hmm. I had worked at a color lab, and we were making the switch, so I needed to learn how to do this digital stuff. And I heard the same college was going to be buying some digital gear. And we're talking infancy stages, mm-hmm. like negative scanners. And a CD burner was brand new. It was like $20,000 to burn a CD, you know, for a CD. But I had heard through some friends that worked at the college that, you know, they're getting this digital stuff. So I decided to take a class to learn this digital stuff. And they're offering a new photojournal class with a new instructor. And I go in and apply and take that class. Ended up teaching that one as well. So I never got any degrees in anything, but taught on two different occasions.
Yeah, right.
Never got my degree. And the whole time was working for local papers mm. and stuff. So it always has hung on me for not doing it. Now, mm. at that time, Cal State Hayward was up on the hill. They were going through a transition from Cal State Hayward to, I forget what they're called now, University Cal State East Bay or something. They just changed the name. Mm-hmm. At the same time, they were switching their record system from paper to computer. And I had a buddy that I went to Chabot with who was working now in the admissions office at the Cal State. Mm-hmm. And several years later, he calls me. I was already out here. So it was like 04, 05. And he calls me up and he goes, hey, you want your degree? And I go, what do you mean? He goes, I was talking to some people I used to work with at the college. And I forget exactly when it was, either late 80s or early 90s when they were doing that switch. They lost big chunks of information. So the admissions office was just kind of on the lowdown, instructed to, if anybody calls to verify diplomas from this time frame to this time frame, just say yes.
Right.
So it was like, you can have your degree if you want it.
Super, I'll take it.
Hey, dude, I didn't have the guts.
Ah.
But, yeah, it was, so I could have had, there's that old joke, it's like, being a graphic arts major only lasts until you know Photoshop enough to make a diploma.
Yeah, exactly, right?
Were you in the, when you went to Yavapai mm-hmm. out of high school with 20 credits, what in an internship, what was your internship from?
My internship was at a radio station.
Which one?
It's Fun Oldies 1450. It's gone now, unfortunately.
That was part of the Great Circle mm-hmm. program, yeah. Bo Woods?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we were in the same studio. You know,
was that on Alto?
Alto
Street, right there, like on the
yes,
yeah,
yeah,
okay.
Oh yeah, you know, I forgot the name of that too. Now it's coming back to me, Alto Street. Yeah, so you know, I'd get there. Show would start at 6 a.m. I'd get there at 5:45.
Before, this is when you're in school still.
Yep, and of course I'd work till 10 the previous night.
What were you doing for him?
You mean for Bo?
Oh, were you working with Bo?
Yeah.
Yep. Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah, so I was working with Bo, and I told him...
No, I'm okay. Don't whisper. Don't whisper. What?
I don't want to be heard. Can I talk to you?
Yeah, Diet Coke, please. Diet Coke.
Right?
Come to Big Daddy E's, get served and harassed.
Yeah, exactly. I got good
go ahead,
soda, too.
Sorry.
Oh, that's okay. You're good. You're good. So I went there, and he was like... Because we had a program of songs, and he was just sitting there. He's like, you know what? I'm sick and tired of all these songs, you know? He's like, oh, yes, please. Thank you so much. He's like, I'm sick and tired.
Vodka.
Right? Hopefully. He's like, I'm sick and tired of all these songs. So I got an idea. Since you're my intern, let's blow up the system and restart. So
we can blame you, see?
Exactly, right? So we blew up the system. We got all brand new music in there. He was tired of hearing Nancy Sinatra. He's like,
oh, this was the deep oldies.
Yeah. Oh, gotcha. Yeah. This is like 50s and 60s, a little bit of 40s. I think there was a little bit of 40s in there. But he was like, I'm tired of hearing Nancy Sinatra. You know, so then we, and it was so much better. Like, we got comments. I'm like, wow, this is so much better. You know, so we took the music. We got a new system. It did it much better. And then when I came back from college, I found it was gone. I was so disappointed about it. But, yeah, we were in the same studio with Lisa, or same building with Lisa. Of course, we interact with Lisa constantly. So I went there 5 to 10, or 5:45 to 10. And then I would go to school. Actually, I took a nap, and then I'd go to school. I got a nap.
See, you blew. When I was in high school, I would take a nap after I got to school.
See, that's a good idea. Yeah. See, I can't do that in college, though. Actually,
this was back in the film days, so we had a lot of time in the dark room.
I'll take a nap.
You just zonk out.
He's like, oh, I'm editing photos, yeah. You know? I got to get my eyes adjusted to the darkness. That's how you got to do it.
I'm not sleeping. Know? I'm checking my eyelids for cracks.
I actually skipped my first college class.
Yeah.
You know, my first college class ever, and I skipped it. And I felt so bad about it that, you know. And then, of course, when I got to Arizona State, I skipped.
So what was your focus? Did you want to get into broadcasting? Was that your goal?
You know, I was always a baseball fan. I played Little League Baseball. And then when I was in middle school and I got benched for half the year, I'm like, I'm probably not going to make the majors, you know. So I was, you know, in many sports athletes' life, unless you're unless you're like the superstar of the team,
gotcha.
You have that day where it's like, this is not going to last for very
especially
long.
Especially up here. There seems to be some very hardcore baseball fans.
Oh, yeah, there is. So I took that and I started doing the other end. You know, I got into my high school newspaper. And
staying with the sports, but on the reporting
I went on
side.
The other side. So instead, I don't have to be in the gym all day long and then go do baseball. Instead, I just show up with my camera. I snap a few photos, get some interviews, write the story. And
nice.
I haven't visited the gym in a year. You know? That's the other half of it, you know. But of course, that's why I'm not making $50 million a year. You know, I'm making $23,000. Exactly, right? That's why. So I knew what I wanted to do throughout high school. And I knew the college I wanted to go to. Went to EFI College. I had a program in Arizona State. As long as I complete these things in 2 years, I can go there. So I said, no, I don't want to do it in 2 years. I want to do it in 1 year because I want 3 years at Arizona State. So I took more than full time at school. Part-time at the job, and then, of course, part-time at the internship as well, Monday through Friday. So at least I thought it was Monday through Friday.
But
sure.
But always with the goal of
always with the
being
goal of
in journalism,
there.
Being in broadcasting of some kind.
Yep.
Now, talk a little bit about the Cronkite School of Journalism. A little bit of the history. Obviously, it's Walter Cronkite, the iconic American newsman. Mm-hmm. Sheesh.
So the Cronkite School is
Big Daddy E,
right.
Bending over and showing me his big E.
Right.
They told me come out here and yell on your microphone.
Hey, do you mind? This is professional, all right?
I'm sure.
Not at all. Not a bit.
That's what makes it good, right? Yeah. You know, I used to have a podcast where I just bring in people, you know? It was great. Somebody walking down the hall. Hey, come on in.
I did one with Les.
Did you go to the Walter Cronkite School of Journalism?
I went there already. Yep. Graduated.
No way. I'm too old to learn. Anyway.
No, it's okay. He
buys his food. We got to let him yap.
Yeah, that's okay. It was great food, by the way. So it started off as a little school in Tempe, just a little guy. Wasn't taken, you know, a lot of people didn't know about it. And then it moved to downtown Phoenix.
Yeah.
So it's literally steps away from the Cronkite, or literally steps away from Chase Field, steps away from the Suns.
Right down from the Renaissance Hotel.
Yep. Yeah. And right next to the Westward Ho.
And the Valley Bar.
Yes.
Which is the home stage to a lot of the... Our sponsor today, Big Pine Comedy Festival, has a sister festival, the Bird City Comedy Festival, that utilizes. It's based out of the Renaissance and uses the Valley Bar and Cornish Pasty and a lot of stuff right around. See full circle. See how I did that?
Yeah,
right around.
See, that's how
the Cronkite School of Journalism.
See, that's professional radio right there at its best. That's the area where they got like the CVS is in there, and it's got the little fountain.
Yeah,
that's where it is, right? Like the bowling alley up top.
Right by Stand Up Live.
Yes,
is right there, and the Copper Blues.
I was never old enough to get in there. Now I am. Now that I've graduated, now I am. Now I'm old enough to get in there.
So what was it like at Cronkite? Because I've a couple of their reps would come when I was with local media here, Western News.
Mm-hmm.
We would have an annual conference, editorial conference, and some seminar stuff, and a lot of, you know, presenting goals and free lunch. But they had a couple of reps the couple of years that I went from Walter Cronkite, and I learned a little bit about it. But give us the insider's scoop on what what's the focus? How does it correspond to the rest of your school? Are you only there? Mm-hmm. See, for a guy who never really went to college, you got to tell me what it was like.
I had a different college experience than most. Going there as a sophomore, I never had the freshman experience where you shared a room with somebody.
Yeah.
And I never had like the classes of 900 because I wasn't there in my freshman year taking all the classes that don't matter. You know.
Gotcha.
Well, they do matter, but they're not mattering
but
to me.
But you got a lot of that general ed.
I got a lot of that general ed by college. So for me,
you got to go in as a sophomore. Specialize.
I went in as a very advanced sophomore. So technically, I was a sophomore. It was my second year, but I was very advanced. So
gotcha.
I was done. I was almost done with math. I was completely done with history. Completely done with science. I didn't have to do any of that. So I wasn't in like the classes of like 300 that you might see in like movies. You know, where you're sitting in all the way in the back and you can't hear
the lecture hall.
Professor.
Kind of.
Yeah.
See, those are the ones you can sleep in.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, those ones are good ones. the highest class I think I was in was maybe 60 people. So that's what Cronkite's very small. It's kind of like a family there because you know everybody. That's the difference. So the Cronkite school it's the Cronkite school, the nursing school that's across the street, and then I think they might have added the business school. They added another building there since I went there, and then it's the dorm. So it's just three little buildings. It's a very small college, and of course Tempe is Tempe. You know, Tempe is the main college experience. All the dorms. All the restaurants on campus.
So were you only at that campus?
I was lucky enough never to have to travel to Tempe. All my friends did for classes. I never did that. I was always downtown Phoenix. But the Cronkite school though is such a fantastic school. And going to the Cronkite school, it kind of gives and see here's what people call it. People are calling it the Syracuse of the West. And, of course, because Syracuse, very big popular journalism school out east.
All I know about Syracuse is they're orange.
They are orange. And the basketball team is very good most of the time.
That's all I know.
Never pick Syracuse to win it all, though. They'll break your heart. Never do it. You know, I pick Kentucky like an adult, you know. So
like a grown man.
Like a grown man, I pick Kentucky, you know. And I pick UBay to lose every year, and so far I'm right every single year. That, you know, even though we're not on the Tempe campus, there's still as much hate for UBay as there is, you know. But the Cronkite school, you go there, and I was surprised how they push you into something like your first week I was there. I thought, well, maybe I'll get my own show on the radio, on the student radio station, maybe a semester. And they're like, "You want your own show? You want your own DJ shift?" I was on the air within my first week.
Oh wow!
DJ music, doing sports updates, and then a week after that, I did a little bit of studio work. So I was on TV, and it was terrible. I was terrible.
Do you
starting
have clips
off.
Of that?
I do.
Is it on your YouTube?
It's not on my YouTube.
Right
it's not.
Website.
No, it's not on my YouTube. Thankfully, it's not on my YouTube because and that's the nice thing is that they have two studios. They have the Cronkite News Studio, which is award-winning and great, and it's like the last thing you do there. And then they have this side studio where they kind of let students do whatever they want.
I like that.
In there.
Well, they have the award-winning one, and then they have the one I used.
And they have the one that I used, you know, because of the programs that weren't award-winning.
It's like Caddyshack. Well, we got a pool. We got a pond, too. Maybe the pond would
but
be better
the
for
other
you.
Side. Yeah, exactly. So the first 3 years, you kind of spend your time in the pond, and then you go to the big studio with all the big stuff. But we had a show in there. It was about college sports. It was a sports production class that the class and the professor decided to turn into a weekly show. So I was on the air, technically, on YouTube my first month that I was there talking sports. And so they have a radio station there, so that's where I got into radio. I always liked radio, but ever since then I've really fallen in love with radio. They have a radio station there. It's great. We constantly send people to New York for awards every year.
Very nice.
I didn't win my little fantasy show that talked about fantasy sports for 20 minutes and Puppy Bowl for the next 40 minutes. That one didn't win. I was really upset, you know, but we won Sports Show of the Year our first year.
Oh, nice.
So that was cool. So they let kids get on the air real quick. And then obviously they're not going to let a freshman on Cronkite News.
Yeah.
However, they will let freshmen run cameras.
Learn the back end. And
exactly. So they'll learn the back end. And I was disappointed I never did that. But I would fully recommend doing that because if I go back from a master's, I want to get some of that behind the scenes.
Yeah.
Because that's how you can get your foot in the door, you know.
Dream job for you.
Yes.
Ultimate dream job. What would you do?
My dream job is to someday end up on MLB Network. I've loved that station since it launched huge baseball fan, so MLB Network would be my main goal. But honestly, my main goal is not where I'm going. My main goal is what I feel like when I'm there.
Yeah.
You know? So if I'm never if I'm never bored coming to work,
gotcha.
That's good for me. If I'm reporting on sports, that'd be great. You know, I could also report on news. You know, whatever kind of keeps it interesting. I never want to feel like I'm, you know,
going to work.
Like I'm going to work.
Yeah.
That's why I love journalism so much. You don't feel like you're going to work. I mean, here's the thing. My friend is a weekend anchor and a reporter at ABC 23 in Bakersfield. Another thing with the Cronkite School, that they have a Cronkite, they have a program where they take kids from the Cronkite School, pay them a salary, give them free housing for a year, and put them through their thing. They kind of use that as a pipeline for their station. I was disappointed I didn't get that.
Yeah.
My friend did. Now he's the weekend anchor there. He's like big honcho there. He's guy. He's the guy that, you know, they put out all their videos. In fact,
oh nice.
Yeah, he just did a a video for Hurricane Harvey. Where he went out there, you know, the kind of videos where they're like,
yeah,
you know, Hurricane Harvey, you know, this is where you do to call, you know.
Yeah.
So he did one of those videos, and I thought that was really telling how far he's gone, and he's only been there for about a year and a half.
Oh,
like,
nice.
They have him doing those videos, speaking for the station, being the face of the station. I feel like he's
very
becoming
nice.
The face of the station. So he went through that to go to the Cronkite School. But back to the thing I was going at earlier, his first day there, they're like, so the police department found some drugs, and they're going to blow it up in the middle of the desert. Want to go cover it? Yeah. Yeah, I do. I do want to go cover that. You know, and then a couple months later, there's a lot of drug things in Vegas. It's weird.
Yeah.
A little bit later on, and then he was doing a live shot, and a guy that was high on something or completely out of his mind was throwing stuff out of his window, throwing cash out of the window, and there he is doing a live shot. And in the background, you see this guy throwing stuff out of the window. What other job, you know, where you just see some things, and obviously you see the best of people.
Yeah.
You see the worst of people as well. And I mean, that's kind of the sad thing, you know.
Yeah.
It's not always like blowing stuff up and other stuff like
but,
that. It's
you
a
know,
sad
yeah,
side.
It's not
but it gives
good.
You something interesting.
Yeah, and
you
it's
know?
not that seeing people at their worst or going through the worst tragedy of their life is a good thing, but
no.
At the same time, having covered many, many events and circumstances over the years, what I always look for, okay, look for the silver lining. What is it? What can we do to capture an image or get a quote, or not to exploit them, but to really tell their story?
Yeah.
To tell the country, tell the world what they are going through.
Mm-hmm.
And it humanizes the event. It makes it so, especially now, back when I started, there were the three networks and then the local print media and, you know, the wire services and some of the bigger papers. Now, social media, internet, there is news 20. I remember when CNN came out, it was going to be 24-hour news. It was a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
It was a big deal that there was going to be 24-hour news. And at the time, I was a news junkie reading four daily papers a day and several news magazines every week. I was a news junkie. I had to cut that way back just because it can take your life over.
Mm-hmm.
But back then, you could tell a story and be the only outlet for it. Now, there's so much content. It will come and go.
Yeah.
And there are stories, even especially the bad ones, that warrant more than that. They warrant more than that 30-second bite that they'll get on Facebook or on YouTube or on 140 characters on Twitter.
Yeah.
They need more than that.
Mm-hmm.
Flashback to the Yarnell tragedy in 13.
Yeah.
That needed more than a news bite, and it got it.
Mm-hmm.
I played a part in that. The national media obviously played a part in that. But to focus in on the human aspect of that or any other thing, it's in today's format of news, it's too easy to say, yes, this was horrible. What's next?
Yeah.
Some of those stories need to be, yes, it was horrible. How do we stop it? How do we avoid having this happen again? And that's where the long-form journalism, the magazine articles, the longer videos, the series of documentary videos come into play for things like that.
And I did do something like that for E! News. It came out a couple weeks ago. I did a story on PSPRS, a big five, six-minute video. I don't remember how long it was, but it was, for those of you who don't know, it's the Public Safety Personnel Retirement System. The personnel, personnel. Sometimes I say personal.
Yeah.
That's not right. It's personnel. It's the Public Safety Personnel Retirement System, PSPRS. And it's a big issue facing, well, still facing, but it was a big issue, especially around the election here. And so what I did is PSPRS is like a centipede of an issue, you know. It's got 19 legs, you know, and you got to tell a story about each one of those legs. So one half of it was, you know, if we don't pass the tax, then, you know, this is what's going to happen.
Yeah.
You know, and the other half of it was, excuse me, how did we get here? You know, how did we try and
what
fix
led
it?
Up to the problem?
What led up to it and how to help these things? And, you know, and that, so that's the thing that I tried to do. And I thought, for sure, I was going to get some backlash on it because I tried to give everybody their fair side.
It was very polarizing. It still is.
Yes. And that's what I thought is that, you know, I figured I must have done a decent job on it because I didn't have anybody saying, like, you were for pro or you were for negative or you're in favor of everybody like that. Pretty much what I try to do with that story is I try to give everybody their fair say. Of course, not let somebody spew on facts that weren't true. But, you know, they had the facts to back it up, and each one of them had the facts to back it up. So here it is. So what I did is, and that's what I did, and that's what I learned at college. And see, when I was saying, like, journalism is one of those things where college doesn't matter as much as other things like that, that's kind of where college does come in. There's a little bit more of those, you know, you learn how to use the tech, you know, and then you learn some of the background stuff, you know, you learn some of the ethics. You know, you learn some of those things. But once you get out in the field, you know, and you know that stuff, I feel like a bunch of they're not looking at the school. They're looking at you.
Yeah.
You know, so what I learned from that school, I brought into that story with PSPRS. I gave everybody their fair side, and I thought I was going to get blasted by somebody. I didn't get blasted by anybody.
Good.
So, I mean, so, you know, that's kind of what I learned. And I really didn't do, because, of course, being a sports reporter, I did sports news stories. Never did box scores. That's the thing about Cronkite. You never do box scores.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I did a story, and I spent a summer out in Santa Monica. I did a story about Tommy John surgery. Mm. You know, a lot of people are getting Tommy John surgery. I went down to the issue. Of course, they're never going to be like, this plus this equals Tommy John. There's a whole bunch of different things.
Yeah.
Of course, Tommy John surgery is an elbow surgery. The UCL,
mm-hmm.
Ligament. So we try to figure out, and from what I discovered, multi-sport athletes are the ones that don't have that problem. You know, the ones that sit there and pitch from a mound from January to December.
From the time they're eight until they're 28. Yeah.
Yeah. All these players are like, oh, I never played with baseball. From what I discovered, that's bad. You know, it's not supposed to. The elbow isn't supposed to be snapping like that could do it for a couple months, but those are the athletes, you know, the ones that play basketball, the ones that play baseball, the ones that play football, and then they have their seasons, you know. So
working out different aspects of their body.
So their elbow is not getting blasted as much as it is with basketball, you know.
Yeah.
Baseball, your elbow is, you know, you have the shot. That's it.
Speaking of basketball.
Yes.
Let's go to NAZ Suns.
Yes.
What was your take on their season last year? I know you were very ingrained in the season, in the arena, with the coaching staff and the players. What was your take? How was the inaugural season for our area?
You know, I thought it couldn't have gone better. I thought it was fantastic. I thought the Suns really came up, and I was concerned a little bit because you don't know how it's going to work out, you know, bringing a new town to a city. But I think, as you mentioned earlier, what helped is having the Phoenix Suns 2 hours away.
Yeah.
I talked to a lot of
fans.
Which
is why one of the reasons why the organization brought them here from Bakersfield, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Yeah. My friend's not thrilled about that.
Ah.
Because he lost his minor league baseball team and his basketball team as well, so he's not thrilled.
Now, I'm not ignoring you right now. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to punch this in. NorthernArizona.gleague.nba.com, or you can just get a link at Phoenix Suns.
That's a new thing, the G League. It used to be the D League.
The development league.
Now it's the Gatorade.
The what?
Gatorade. Gatorade. It literally
Speaking
is.
Speaking of sponsorship, yeah. MileHighShow.com. Yep. You can go to the Contact Us or support the show page and sponsor us like Big Daddy Ease did today.
Yeah.
And we will happily take your money, as I've liked to point out on different occasions. It's a way for you to sponsor the show and avoid me knocking on your door asking to borrow money. So,
right.
What are we in for this year, for year two of the Northern Arizona Suns?
I would say it's more of the same. Obviously, the roster, and that's the kind of thing with the NAC Suns. You're not exactly sure who's going to be on the roster. Yeah. And that's just the way the D-League works. And one more point I want to bring about last year, and this is the thing about the NAC Suns last year, is that they started off so hot, and then they kind of took a dip in the second half, and then they didn't make the playoffs. But I'll tell you why that's fine. You know why they didn't take the playoffs? Because the people that were putting them to the playoffs got called up.
Gotcha.
That is the entire goal.
The development
league. So obviously we would love to see them in the playoffs, but I can tell you, and I think everybody understood this, you know, we don't make the playoffs, fine. But we had Johnny O'Brien going to play in the NBA. We had Eli Millsap end the season in the NBA. We had Derek Jones Jr. go to the All-Star game and finish with the Suns.
I think that's what's really telling in that is the commitment that the NBA and the Phoenix Suns have to the organization, that they're going to utilize this as a talent pool as opposed to a place where they can shelve off spare toys, I guess. So that's a good telling thing for our future here, and ideally folks will get out there. I will be out there more and more this year. I should have looked at it. Do you know when that free scrimmage thing is?
The free scrimmage thing,
I want to say October
is on. I think the free scrimmage against the Suns, I think, is on the 28th, if I can.
28th to 29th. So I'll put a link in there, though.
Something like that. But Saturday, the 9th,
Tomorrow
they are having a open tryout.
Here, yeah.
So from that, and then from the one in Scottsdale, they'll take a few. I can't remember. I think John Gray might have been one of the players that they brought from the tryouts last year. Don't quote me on that, but I'm decently sure John Gray was one of the ones, and he was a fantastic player last year. So that's what I'm talking about. Like, you can't really tell what the NAC Suns are going to be this year, because quite frankly, they have no idea who's going to be on that team.
Yeah. But it's exciting.
I can tell you it's going to be exciting. Yeah. It's going to be it's always high energy.
And that's part of it. A great presentation that the league does, the Prescott Valley Event Center staff does, and of course, we don't want to leave him out because we're here at Big Daddy E's, but Jim Cabral and the family over there at Gabby's and Kitchens Inc., because they do a great job in feeding and making sure everybody has a good time. What's on the horizon for you, Torrance?
What's on the horizon for
without
me?
Without giving away too much.
I got some things up my sleeve.
Yeah.
But without giving away too much, I'm going to still I'll be here doing high school sports and college sports in the Northern Arizona Suns. So you'll see all my stuff on the E-News family of websites.
And maybe, I'm going to speak out of turn here, but you had talked about maybe at some point in the near future relaunching that podcast that you had done before, so some fantasy sports stuff.
Yep. So
we'll talk about that as well.
Yep. So if you don't know what fantasy sports is, I don't know how you wouldn't be able to tell. One of the DraftKings commercials on every other commercial. Fantasy sports, you take a bunch of players and you put them together on a team, and what they do gets you points, and you face somebody else, and that's what fantasy sports is. So it's so you run your own team.
Be the owner.
Yes. So I had one of those, and you can trade people away. That way you can't sit there. You know.
So we'll look for maybe some new Torrance Dunham fantasy sports podcasting soon.
Yep.
Again, TorranceDunham.com, Instagram TorranceD_journalism, and then Twitter is TA Dunham. And we were brought to you today by Big Daddy E's Barbecue. I'd love to have you back. Let's set up, and we'll chat more maybe as the Sun season comes on. Mm-hmm. And don't forget BigPineComedyFestival.com, the Big Pine Comedy Festival in Flagstaff, September 14th, 15th, and 16th. This has been episode 150.